Blog Talk Radio. Yo, yo, Al.
Yo, I'm here. I'm here. Just on the phone. Be off in a second.
All right.
Yep. It's good, bro.
Yo.
Old man yawn.
Yeah. Check, check, check. All right. All right, let me get you in here. Boom, boom, boom. No, that's not it. Okay, there we go.
All right.
Check one, check two, just give me some levels.
Mic check, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Okay, all right, cool. Damn, I didn't even look into anything about the draft. All right, as far as draft, just trying to think. Obviously, we talk about Wembanyama. Talk about, you know, how does this class stack up against the rest?
Mm-hmm.
Where some of the value is. I can talk to him about what his experience has been like.
Mm-hmm.
Wings, second round, sleepers. I think that's pretty much it, right?
Yeah.
The top five. Did you look, you, well, you've seen the top five, right? From 5 to 1?
Yep.
All right, cool. All right.
We worked on it, bro. Come on, man.
Yeah, I was just, I had to get all the footage because Tyler wasn't around, so I had to get that done.
All right.
Professor Gardner. Keyshawn Wallace. Oh, who did they say interview with the Knicks, though? There was a player that did. There was a prospect that Jackson interview with the Lakers, Knicks, Raptors. Jackson also wants executives. No, he can fit into a system. Who was, which Jackson was this? Jackson, something Jackson.
D.G. Jackson?
D.G. Jackson. Yeah, D.G. Jackson. So we'll ask him about him.
Okay.
D.G. Jackson. Okay. All right. Okay. Oh, shit. Let me get that in there. Da-da-da. Okay. All right.
Yeah, he interviewed with the Knicks at the Combine.
Okay. Got it. Okay. All right. Okay. Oh, let me send him the joint.
You see that Knicks Twitter this past week was talking about Alonzo Trier?
Yes. Yeah. Let's talk about it. We can talk about that. We can definitely talk about that. Why not? So we can do Randall Brunson Isozo. We can
Brunson
do the hard stuff.
Going. Yep.
A hard interview.
Brunson going to the FIBA World Cup?
Yeah. FIBA World Cup. Hard interview. We can just go like rapid fire through some things. I'm hoping to get him on by like 10:15, so we don't have to go too long and shit.
Okay.
All right.
And the Julius Randle injury, right?
Yeah, we'll
the
start. We'll start with that. Here, the Zoom link. 10:15. Okay. What's the other shit I need to do? I need a fucking full-time producer, man. What is this? Shit. See, that's the thing, man. I don't fucking have this, man. Fuck. Damn. That's not good. Damn, bro. All right. Literally gonna have to make a brand new thing. That is fucking whack. Shit. It's gonna take me a little while. I mean, I should be able to do it while we go live. That's the best thing I'm be able to do. Yeah, I need a fucking producer, man. This is just fucking too much. I should have had Daniel do this, really. All right, let's see. That's fucking too much, man. Hold this in there. Okay. Get the weekly template in there. Okay. And then I can move my cam in there. All right. I'll just start with that, and then I'll just have to do everything fucking manually. Okay, all right. Next draft, dude. Thank you, Smith. Okay. Where is this? All right, ready?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even fucking put this on. No, no. Okay. Oh, I got to do the fucking Oakley Reed and the fuck. All right. Shit literally takes like an hour to set up, man. Like, I can't fucking do this anymore. I can't do this. I got to Oakley Reed. Manscaped. Oakley Manscaped. All right. Cool. Okay. All right, here we go. Salute to Knicks Nation on this Monday night. Another edition of Knicks Weekly presented by KnicksFanTV.com, man. CP the franchise, Alex Tosh in the building. On tonight's show, Julius Randle had off-season surgery on his injured left ankle, man. We're going to talk about that because a raging debate ensued amongst Knicks fans. Jalen Brunson will be headed to Team USA. We'll talk about that as well. Josh Hart talks more breast milk and free agency. The hot topics you want to know. Plus, it is draft season, and even though the Knicks don't have a draft pick, things can change quite quickly. So we got our guy Corey Tulliver from the No Ceilings podcast. He do great work talking NBA draft for a draft Q&A. So if you have questions, he's got answers for you, man. Call us up, 657-383-1509, or you can hit us up on the KFTV Discord, man. So to everybody in the chat, hit that thumbs up button for you boys. Al, how you feel, man? How was your weekend, man?
It was good, bro. I was down in H-Town, hung out with
H-Town.
Some family.
Nice.
So had some good Texas barbecue.
Of course.
You know?
Yeah.
You got to do it. That's the only way you do Texas right, man.
Yeah.
I went to a Jamaican vineyard, bro.
That's interesting,
right?
Yeah.
How many times do you hear about a Jamaican vineyard tasting some wine in Texas?
Right.
How many times do you hear that?
Right. I mean, yeah, that's usually not, you know, our forte, but what kind of wine? Anything good?
They had the whole blend of like reds and whites.
Okay.
It was solid.
Yeah.
Right? It was solid attempt. Appreciate it. They're trying, man.
Yeah.
It just opened up this year, but they're still working on some of their stuff, but it was good. I'm a red wine guy. I'm a red wine. Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I like. I can go for some white during the summertime.
Yeah.
Especially when you're down in Houston and it's 90 degrees.
It's blazing every day, night and day.
Yeah, man. And the humidity. So
yeah.
Went out there, chilled, had a good time. Solid, man. Came back. Flight was delayed though. I didn't get home until 2 a.m. Yeah.
Yeah, you better get some compensation out of that, man.
Yeah. So I didn't get home until 2 a.m. I was supposed to get home at midnight.
Damn.
That's how much of a delay it was.
Damn.
But hey, we here, man. We're here to talk about the Knicks. Here to talk about everything else. How was your weekend, though?
Yeah, it was cool, man. Low key, you know. I did my vineyard thing 2 weeks ago, so this weekend was more low key, man. But, you know, it's always good to chill out, catch up on some rest, and recover, you know?
Yeah, man, that's what you need sometimes, man.
Yeah.
You just need to chill, nothing too crazy, get your mind right, you know, relax the body. Look, man, you're doing two shows a day now.
Two days, man. Shout out to the NBA Report, man. We had a great show today, man.
Yes, sir, with Chuck D, so make sure to go check that out if you all haven't. And make sure to subscribe over to the NBA Report.
Absolutely.
Okay? So, man, got to get that rest. Got to keep that brain sharp for the analysis. Just like we're about to do right now.
Yeah.
Just like we're about to do right now.
Also on today's show, we forgot our top 10 moments of the season. We're doing 5-1.
Woo.
We got some good ones in here, man. So tap into all of our channel members. I see JJ in here, Brian Jordan. Salute. Salute to all the mods once again, man. And yeah, listen, man, call us up 657-383-1509, or you could hit us up on the Knicks Fan TV Discord And some news over the weekend, Al, and one of them didn't have Knicks fans too pleased. Well, both of them didn't have Knicks fans too pleased. Julius Randle. It was revealed that Julius Randle had surgery, arthroscopic surgery, on the left ankle that he had first injured against Miami Heat at near the end of the regular season, and then also re-injured in the Knicks Game 5 victory over the Cavs. So the reports are saying that he is expected to be ready for training camp. So had to get a little cleanup done. Expected to be ready for training camp. Now, what happened after this was just, you know, typical Knicks fans in this fashion. So he has the surgery, and now it's the Hatfields and the McCoys. You have the Julius supporters, led by Robert Randolph and his band of merry men, saying, this is what you guys get for hating on the guy, you guys that wanted to trade him. This is what now look at this. He was playing hurt this whole time. You guys owe him another apology. They want another apology tour for Julius. Okay? But they're wrong. They're wrong. Then you had the Julius detractors saying, well, that's just an excuse for his terrible play. Trade him anyway. It's just an excuse. This guy played with this injury. This guy played with that injury. I had a sprained ankle before. I could play. And they're wrong. So you got these two sides going at it. Completely wrong on the issue. On the Randle injury. Because for the supporters side, there's just a common misconception here where if you have an opinion that says this guy, although is a talented player, may not be the best fit for this team moving forward to achieve their goals, you're dubbed a hater.
Yes.
Where you're simply, yes, some people are toxic, some people are inflammatory. That is a small minority of people. Most people are commenting on the business of basketball, as I like to call it, meaning they're trying to figure out what is the best path forward for this team to compete. And many people, myself included, do not believe that they can win with him as one of their top guys. I just don't see it. Now, the supporters say, oh, you're a hater. You're a hater. That's just the business of basketball, bro. Then on the other side with the detractors, it's an excuse. You know, he still snuck up the joint, get rid of him, blah, blah, blah. I mean, you don't know. He played. You give him credit for that. He gutted it out. He definitely played. How much did the injury impact his play? It's hard to say. But to just go out there and say, well, you know, they're just making excuses and this, that, and the third, I don't think that's right either, man.
It's touchy, man. It's touchy and it's difficult because, as you already pointed out, you got the Hatfield and the McCoys. It's like Romeo and Juliet, man.
Yeah.
Right? You got both families who don't want to come eye to eye, and they just want to stay on their sides and believe their truth. But here's the thing. When I look at this Randle situation, we also don't know the details of what this surgery was for, right? This was a small incision. So we don't know if this is necessarily for pain, for cleanup.
Right.
You know, I did a little bit of research for what this type of surgery is. Sometimes it's to repair scar tissue because after you roll your ankle, especially multiple times, scar tissue develops, and then it's just easier for your ankle to be re-injured again. We don't know what type of surgery Julius had.
We don't know.
We don't know all those details. But I will say this. For me, I look at it. I'm the type of guy that says, if you're on the court, I expect 100% effort. Okay.
Yeah.
When I watched Julius's postseason, there were games, especially during the Cavs, where he tried. And then there were moments, especially during the Heat, where it looked like he wasn't giving it his all, man. Like, and the fact that I can look at most players on this Knicks team and say, he tried, Brunson tried, RJ tried, all these other guys. And for Julius, especially the position that he is on this team, and I could say there were moments where I felt like Could have given a little bit more. Could have hustled back. Could have closed on Kevin Love. You know?
Yeah.
The tall tale image of him throwing his hands up in the air, not being in the frame for however long. Why aren't you getting back on defense? And it's complicated because you could say maybe the injury affected his offense, right? But if you're going to be out on the court, even what we saw with Jason Tatum, who's grimacing, he's at least trying every single play that he can, I expect the same thing from Julius. And for me, I look at the injury, I really don't go too far into say this is the reason why he didn't perform.
Right.
Because right. We saw this before the playoffs, actually. You know what I mean? Like, after the double OT Celtics game. I like to go back to that point because that's really when the season changed for him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Prior to Julius, prior to that game, after Obi went down, Randle got more extended time once Obi got down because Obi was getting like that 17, maybe in close some nights, the 20-minute mark during the beginning of the season. Obi goes down. Randle now has this runway to really get into rhythm. And from the time that Obi went down, which was December 9th, right, until March 5th, that Celtics double OT game, these are Randle's numbers. He is averaging 27.7 points. He is averaging 47% from the field, 36% from three, shooting 74% from downtown, getting you about 11.4 rebounds, 4.5 assists, okay? After that game against the Celtics in double OT, these are Randle's numbers. 24 points, 42% from the field, 28.6% from downtown. His free throw percentage was a little bit better, got 76%. He was averaging 7.3 rebounds, 3.8 assists. Numbers dropped. That was up until he got injured against Miami. He can say it was from being tired, stressed, whatever, from a long season because he likes to play every single game. We saw it. And for me, I look at that part of the season, seeing that he was on his – probably getting exhausted, on the – like not having a great finish to the end of the season. I can't say that because of the injury – without I can't say without the injury that he performed better in the playoffs because I already saw that.
Right.
So for me, I'm like – is the injury really the big thing? Okay, he doesn't want to go by the injury being the big deal for his performance. He was on the court, like I said, expected to play. Now, if you want to say, hey, he did everything else, but the offense was shaky because the pressure that he needs on his ankle in order to take the step-back jumpers, the physicality that he needs, I can buy that. But I can't condone the lack of effort on defense that we saw against the Miami Heat. I can't do that, especially when we saw some good games from him in the series, like a game five, like a game two. It's just tough to go off that injury. So when I see that, I'm like, we don't know how much the injury played, but what I do know is that he was on the court and he didn't perform well. That's what I do.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to stick with.
Yeah, that's it. Like, you just don't know what to – you know, link the injury to, or how much of his production was hampered by the injury. All you can go off of is that he didn't play as well for a second playoff. And whether it's him, the system, it's just something that's just not clicking there. He had his bright spots, right? I thought game five of the Heat series, I thought he was good for the second half of that game. Game one, coming back into the Cavs series, I thought he gave the team a great lift, especially when Brunson didn't have it to start that game off. Had his moments. Overall, wasn't great. Bad shooting. One of the worst shooters in the playoffs.
Look, even game five, he had his moment against the Cavs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he had his moments against the Cavs, but it was still inconsistent throughout the playoffs, what we saw towards the end of the regular season. Like, we could be like, oh, he had a really good game against the Nuggets. But he didn't really have a good game against the Hornets. Didn't really have a good game against the Kings. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I look at it as the end of the season, the playoffs are too similar where I can't really say that the injury was that impactful on his game. Also, we just, once again, don't know what – is it more for, like, future? Was it really pain tolerance? What was the reasoning for the surgery.
Right.
We don't know that.
You don't know. You just don't know. And so, look, man, the business of basketball, it's a cold business. All right? These guys, they interact with their front offices. They're all chummy-chummy. They're all intertwined with family, this, that, and third. But listen, when these guys in the suits upstairs need to make a decision for the best of the franchise, you're out of here if they need to. I remember when Langston Galloway, yes, a smaller time player, but a former Knick, when he came on the show and told us about the story when, in the offseason many moons ago, he signs with his hometown, New Orleans Pelicans. Hometown. Brought him in. Welcome home, son. By February trade deadline, they had shipped him off to Sacramento. 5 months. He was out of there. All right? Now, you could imagine the conversations that were being had when they're courting him. Oh, we see you as part of our future, coming off the bench. You're going to be this. You're going to be that. We're looking forward to it. 5 months later, they had shipped him off to then Siberia. Sacramento wasn't doing what they was doing now. The business, it's a cold business. Stars get traded. So speaking of Sacramento, Sabonis got traded. Sabonis has gotten traded. And Paul George has been traded. Paul George has been traded.
Kawhi Leonard was traded from the Spurs to the Raptors.
There you go. Kawhi Leonard was traded. DeMar DeRozan, a worshipped hero in Toronto.
Oh, I thought you were saying Montenegro Nation for a second.
No.
For who they want.
DeMar DeRozan was traded. I mean, these things happen in the league. That's all I'm saying. These things happen in the league. Now, I've also gone on record to say Randle trade is not easy. I don't think the Knicks will trade him. I think he's going to be part of this team. And that's just it. But the whole idea is that, like, if you want the team to make certain moves that, like, you hate a guy, like, that's just not it.
It's tough, man.
That's just not it.
Yeah. I would have been more, like, and it's tougher now because of how he performed, because of the accolades he got this season. He was third team All-NBA, All-Star. So there is value to him, right? This isn't like last season where I said, hey, you move this guy at all costs, because to me, that is addition by subtraction. Someone who is that, you can't have that type of influence in a locker room, okay? The fact that we have Johnny Bryant and Julius Randle, as it was reported by our guy Ian Begley, where Johnny Bryant says, do you want to be that type of guy in the locker room? Would you want to be your own teammate? And he said, no. These are things where that self-reflection, right, that self-awareness saying, I was in a good headspace.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's on – like, I'll give you an example. You look at the Indiana Pacers when they got rid of Danny Granger, a beloved vet, even though he wasn't healthy, right, for Evan Turner.
Mm-hmm.
It ruined the whole chemistry of the locker room. A locker room is so sacred, man. And sometimes how players interact with each other, how the camaraderie that's built, that's really what you see with these teams. And we're seeing it right now with the Nuggets and the Miami Heat, man. They're going out there, they got each other's back, and they're going to battle.
Yeah.
Right? And for last season, I would have said, do that. Now, I'm still saying you trade Randle. I, like you, don't believe that this guy he's not the number two. He's probably three, best option is a four, right? You could potentially win with him as a three, potentially as a four. I still say you can't just get rid of him at this point because he does have value. Some team would make a trade for Julius Randle.
Yeah.
All right? But I'm just not going to just throw him away, because I also look at it as you still have Jalen Brunson on this team, and what are you selling to Brunson?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, unless you're guaranteeing me that RG is going to take this leap where he can be that guy next season, I don't see that. But if RJ does become that guy, let's say RJ does become that guy, then it makes it more likely that you could say, okay, we can move off from someone like Randle. Because teams like to have that and make sure they have that in their possession, where they have that type of option where, oh, we got so much talent that we can move on from somebody, right?
Yeah.
You saw that with the Celtics when they find out, oh, we have Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, who are really good. We can move off of a Gordon Hayward. We can move off of a Kyrie Irving because we're going to be fine. They want to make sure they have that, something like that, before they make those type of moves.
Absolutely. So,
and I feel like the Knicks would do the same thing with Julius Randle.
Speaking of Jalen Brunson was also in the news this week because he's FIBA bound. Jalen Brunson is going to the Philippines as a member of Team USA to represent in the World Cup. World Cup starting, I believe, the end of August into September. Jalen Brunson is among the 12-man roster, which right now is comprised of Mikal Bridges, his Nova teammate, Anthony Edwards, the Ant-Man, Tyrese Halliburton, no Halliburton, except, yes, Halliburton is going to the Philippines. Brandon Ingram, B.I., is going to the Philippines. And Jaren Jackson Jr., Bobby Portis, once Nick Owens and Nick. Are you inviting Bobby Portis to the once Nick Owens and Nick barbecue? What say
yes.
you? Oh,
yes.
Wow.
Yes. Look,
wow.
Man, we got to appreciate that game against the Bulls where he just goes ballistic.
The Bobby Portis game. Is that a fan favorite? Is that a memory that has been etched in your brain?
Yes.
That's pathetic.
Because I remember how dark those times were, CP.
That is pathetic. He's not getting an invite from me, man. I like Portis near the end of the year. Remember, I was trying to get rid of Portis, too.
You were hating on Portis.
Yeah. Yeah.
You were, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Can we get clips of that? Because the amount of...
Pull that up. I was trying to get Portis out of here. Julius, everybody, man. But, yeah, Bobby P. What a resurrection. And Austin Reeves, who's set to make a lot of money this offseason. And so there's still four more slots left, I believe. But that's it right now. What do you think about? First of all, well, not about the squad, but there are some Knicks fans who are not happy with the fact that our point guard is going to be playing extra time.
No, man.
Representing his country, but playing extra time out there in the Philippines. Your thoughts on that?
This is a great honor, man. Come on now. It's a great honor. Who's the coach? Greg Popovich, right?
Is it Pop or is it
who's the coach?
Is it Pop?
Pop? I think he's the coach.
Is it still Pop or is it somebody else?
Let's see. I'll look that up. But right now, like, regardless, the opportunity to go represent your country in a World Cup, like, why would you? Like, I get the concerns, like the injury concerns. I think everyone goes back to the Paul George mishap, right?
Yeah.
Everyone thinks about that where it's like, oh, my God, you lose Paul George for a year. He only plays six games when he returns. Why are we going to put extra miles on our point guard who, you know, was getting around-the-clock treatment against the Miami Heat? I get that. But this is where you get relationships. This is where players start to have those conversations. If you want to court somebody that can bring you over to the team, that's one thing. I think good experience. I think it's also a good experience, too, just for flexibility, man, just seeing what other offenses are out there, what other, like, how other teams play, right?
Mm-hmm.
Seeing other coaching ideas, you could bring that back to your own team.
A little recon. Okay.
Yeah, man. I like that. I like that.
I got
you. I'm all for representing the country. What do you feel? How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I mean, look, the injury risk is always a thing, right? So obviously, that's the first thing you're concerned about whenever you have players playing, you know, and whether it's the Olympics, World Cup, you know, whatever it is. But injuries can happen at any time also. So you just never know. Injuries could happen in practice. They could happen in the preseason. They could happen in the regular season. You just don't know. So it's a great opportunity for him. Maybe he wants to play in the Olympics. Maybe this is a jumping off point, as you said. And shout out to Jay in the chat. It's a relationship builder. Maybe he goes there, recruits a future teammate. Maybe he recruits Ant-Man, right? Maybe he brings Ant-Man to New York in a couple of years. Say we want Ant. We don't want the cat. We want the Ant.
Yes.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? Goes there, plays with Ant Edwards. Ant Edwards is like, yo, you're the best point guard I ever played with, man.
Yeah.
I had to play with D'Angelo Russell. I had to play with Mike Conley.
Shout out to Conley.
On another level, bro. Maybe we should be playing on the same team.
Yeah.
Yo, man, New York, it's a great spot, man. The lights, people love you.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Ignacio in the chat says Ant-Man or Bridges. Well, Bridges is automatic. It's just an automatically never going to happen because he's on the Nets. So you know, just not going to happen there. Who else on this list we would recruit? Brandon Ingram, definitely. Definitely.
Your boy Bobby Portis.
No. you know, Jaren Jackson Jr. What happens in Memphis? What happens in Memphis? You know, you'd have to think they would keep him as a building block, but I think depending on how you build this team, I think a guy like a Jaren Jackson Jr. would be a great fit for this team, depending on how the other pieces look. You have a defensive player of the year, can space the floor for you, versatile. I think that's what you're looking for in your four spot, depending on how the other pieces look.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm all for a defensive four, or oriented defensive four who can stretch the floor. And then you upgrade at your perimeter positions. Absolutely. I'm all for that type of design.
Definitely. His father's here. His father's with the G League Knicks. Had a good convo with his dad over at Summer League. Stand-up guy. And a friend of the program that I learned when I got there at Vegas. He was telling me about my show. So, yeah. I think...
make sure to tell him to tell his son.
Yeah.
Memphis don't got covered like this,
right? That's right. That's right. That's right. And we've got more stability over here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you don't have to worry about your point guard not knowing if he's going to be playing most of the season or not.
That's right. Absolutely. So somebody said he is CAA. I wouldn't doubt it. Let's take a look here. Jaren Jackson, contract, CAA. There you go. He's part of the family. He's part of the family. If you want to put your tinfoil hats on, there it is.
If only he went to Kentucky.
it would have completed all of that, right? So look to everybody in the chat. Once again, hit that thumbs up button for you boys. Let's see who wants to chop it up, man. Area code 917. What's your name? Where are you calling in from?
Yo, fellas. What's up? It's JJ from Brooklyn. How's everything?
JJ, what's good, man? How you feeling? What's good, man?
Feeling good, man. Feeling good. Couple points, man. First, when Randall, like CP, I got to give you credit because when everybody was calling during the season, you know, making apologies, you said, I'm not doing it yet. What did you say? Show me what happens in playoff time. I'll wait for playoff time. And, you know, so, right. I give you credit. You know, people were apologizing too early. You know, but now if he has the excuse, I don't know. But to me, if you're on the court, you're on the court, you know. My main excuse, if there is one, not to make, you know, excuses for Randall, he did have two of the hardest matchups going against Mobley in Cleveland, and then Bam. It doesn't get harder than those two defenders, right?
Two of the best isolation
if you want to cut him
league.
Some slack, absolutely, 100%, 100%. Yeah. You know, but the thing is, it's not going to matter what he does in the season next year. It's not going to matter if he wins MVP. The fans aren't going to care. They're going to say what you said, deservedly so. Wake me up in the playoffs. So hopefully, because they're not moving him. We got to be honest. He's not going anywhere.
No chance.
I think
no
if anybody gets traded, no chance. If anyone gets traded, it's going to be the kids, I think. It's going to be your OBs, your Quickleys, your RJs. I could see a good three of the kids getting traded. You know, if they make a big move. And my last point, if you do make the big move, though, man, like, it's just, it comes with a lot of risk. Like, look at the names that you're hearing, Towns, Levine, Beal. These guys haven't shown they can be a number one or even a number two on a true contender. So any player you're going to trade for is going to come with risk, especially you're giving up picks and young players. Oh, yeah, one last point, free agency. One guy that I don't hear a lot of people saying, I don't want to get on Mitchell Robinson, but it's tough. When you're playing in the playoffs versus a team like Miami, a smart defensive team, you're almost playing 4-5. I don't want to get on Mitch, but in your fifth year, you still don't have any offensive game. So I'm not going to say he doesn't do things to help the team because that would just be false because he does. But I would love a stretch five, somebody I like a lot. I know we're talking about Cat, but I want another big on Minnesota. I want Naz Reid big time. From the
This
kid, 24 years old, he's a bucket, bro. 18-8 in the games he started for Gobert. When Gobert was out, he stretches the floor, and he's got dog in him, which we need.
He's tough.
I would
he's
try
tough.
And throw
like
if we could. Absolutely, man. I love me some Naz Reid. He could shoot. He's got a post game. He's a dog. Yeah, he's a New Jersey guy, so that would be one of my top targets. But, yeah, that's all I wanted to say. Thanks a lot, man. Appreciate it.
What's the situation?
Yeah, he's a free agent.
Okay.
Pretty sure he's unrestricted.
Contract. Let's take a look. Salute to everybody in the chat, man. Hit that thumbs up button for you boys. See my guy Anthony Parasol in the chat right now. Anthony, what's going on? Let's take a look at this. Naz Reid, free agent, unrestricted free agent, making $2 million, bro. Very interesting. You know, I don't think they do that. Like, is there a possibility they trade Mitch this offseason? Who knows? I don't think anything's possible. But for a guy like a Reid, I say this to say they signed, they did pick up Hartenstein. He played well. I think his minutes are pretty much set next year. His contract's guaranteed next year. So unless you part with Mitch to maybe get a wing, that'd be tough. But you do have the $12 million mid-level.
You got Mitch, who was extended. You got Mitch, who was re-signed last season. You have Hartenstein, who was signed last season. You have Jericho Sims, who was also signed last season.
Yeah.
Sims. The Knicks go out to go get a center. I don't, unless Mitch is part of a package deal to go upgrade at like a wing position, I don't see how Naz Reid is in the future for the Knicks.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't
see him. He's a solid center, man. I mean,
I like him. He's a scrapper. Yeah. I like him. I like his game, man.
You know, he was the backup to Kat and Rudy Gobert, so.
Yeah. Naz Reid, 11-4 off the bench, third season.
Do you think he could be a starting center? Because he's been a backup. It's different, man. It's different from being a backup to being a starter.
Yeah. It's different, but I mean, you know, the way the Knicks do it right now, it's almost like they do it by committee anyway. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Mitch is tough. But it's just, I think after next season is when they're going to make some tough decisions with this roster to figure out the best path forward, because that starting five, I just don't think that has longevity together. So something's going to have to move for the sake of getting better and getting more complimentary. I just don't see it right now.
Would you want a stretch five on this team?
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, they need one. They definitely need one.
Even if this roster was changed, would you still want a stretch five?
It depends on what the change is.
Because I understand the desire for a stretch five with this current roster.
Yeah.
Especially when you have Brunson, RJ, Randall, who all like to live 15 feet closer. But who are the other stretch bigs that we saw make it far? Like, even while we go last season's finals, right? And I get each team is constructed differently.
Mm-hmm.
But is it Miles Turner that you're going to look at? Is it Carl Anthony Towns?
No.
What stretch five is out there that really is that much of a game changer? Because you got to think that when you trade Mitch, you're losing elite offensive rebounding.
Elite.
Like, we're talking about number two.
Which is part of their offense.
Yeah, we're talking about number two. Talking about number two in the league in offensive rebounds, right behind Steven Adams.
Mm-hmm.
So you lose elite offensive rebounding. You lose a guy who's capable of switching on the pick and roll.
Yeah.
Right? And this is a coach, by the way, who likes to utilize drop coverage. And Mitch's ability to move quickly is what helps this defense. If you're talking about Miles Turner, you lose defensively. Carl Anthony Towns, you lose defensively. Like, it's all good stuff. I just don't see them as big. It's one thing to trade somebody for stretch five if they're so lethal on offense that we can live with the defensive woes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I just don't see any of the options that are out there that would give you that. I see the Porzingis name thrown around again. I don't see KP being that guy either who is so offensively gifted that you'll be like, okay, the defensive side, it's fine because we'll still outscore our opponents. I just don't see that.
Absolutely, man. Okay, salute to everybody in the chat. Once again, hit that thumbs up button for your boy, CP and Alex from the ones and twos. Knicks weekly episode 60, Josh Hart met with Taylor Rooks. You know, the whole breast milk thing really took on a life of its own, man. So he hit all the national airwaves, met with Stephen A., and now he met with Taylor Rooks to explain that. We're not going to drop that sound bite because I'm not going to drop that soundbite. But he did talk about free agency. Yeah. Yeah. He did talk about free agency, and here's what he said. Let's react to it. Here we go. Oh, let me get back to this. All right, there that is. So, you know, gave the usual free agency spiel. I'm going to play the field, take care of business, do what's best for me, but I'm most likely staying. He's going to stay. He's got the option. Let's take a look here. What's his contract is kind of weird. So to everybody in the chat, once again, hit that thumbs up button for you boys. He has a $12.9 million player option, which becomes fully guaranteed on June 25th.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to opt out of it. A lot of people are thinking he's going to get around 17. And you got to think the Knicks are the front runner. He loves it here. Brunson's here. You know, they do the thing with Mikal Bridges. They're trying to get DiVincenzo here. He's here. So you have to expect that he gets locked up. And look, I think it's a good
Tibbs
move.
Loves him.
Tibbs loves him. He's a Tibbs guy. It's a good move. I thought Hart had a great year for us.
Yeah, I expect him to be re-signed. I mean, that was the rumor as soon as we traded for him. I mean, Knicks traded a first-round pick, so it doesn't make sense to lose Hart in free agency after trading your first-round pick. So I expect the deal to get done. And I think he'll be, you know, I think 17 is probably around the range that he's going to get, 17, 18. But, yeah, solid guy. I like the way he played for the Knicks, man. Awesome addition to the team.
Yeah, he played like a Knick, right? He played like a Knick.
He wore that number proudly.
He wore that proudly. A lot of people love to put the Starks name on him and, you know, just burst onto the scene. I thought he covered up a lot of holes for these guys and, you know, had some bright spots, man. Jack of all trades was able to do just a little bit of everything that the team needed. Play tough, play physical, get after it on the boards, be a willing playmaker, be selfless. In the regular season, was able to knock down some shots. Postseason, wasn't really falling for him. But nevertheless, a solid piece off the bench that anybody could use. So that's that on Josh Hart. Now, he also talked about what went wrong in the playoffs. Let's hear a little bit of it. This is courtesy of Bleacher Report, Taylor Rooks Show, featuring Josh Hart, Breast Milk. Okay, here you go. That's you get the gist of it. Shots weren't falling. But I like the fact that he put himself first in that group.
Those Nova leaders.
Yeah, I like that. You know what I mean? That accountability that those Nova guys, they're never afraid to accept responsibility. But he was right, man. These guys couldn't hit the broadside of a barn, you know?
No, it was ugly. So. But yet, to Josh Hart's point, Miami is now leading
yeah.
in the playoffs with three-point percentage, 39.2%.
Hey.
Oh, how things don't make sense.
Remember when I told you we were not the better team? You see what these guys just did last night.
They're showing up, man. I hate to say it. I hate to say it.
They are
from coaching to the role players.
Yeah.
Everyone is in lockstep. It is what the Miami Heat are doing, especially without Tyler Hero.
Yeah.
You know, that's a question I want to know from Heat fans.
Yeah.
And even the organization, what do you do if Tyler Hero doesn't play at all? And let's say they win at all, you know, like what?
It's happened.
Got Caleb Martin. You got Gabe Vincent. Yeah. You got Duncan Robinson out here driving and knocking down threes.
Yeah.
That's a question I have.
True story, man. It has happened. So, you know, certainly a good problem to have right now for the Miami Heat, who clapped back with a resilient game against the Nuggets in game two. Good. Nice win by the Heat last night. I hate giving them credit, but got to give credit where it's due. We talked a lot about that on the NBA report, man. Make sure that you guys are tapping into that. Had a great show earlier today with Alex and the Rhyme Animal, Chuck D, man. So make sure you guys tap into the NBA report. Had a great show. We talked game two. We talked about the whole Kyrie-LeBron fiasco. Kyrie tried to get LeBron to Dallas. Talked about expansion, NBA expansion. So great show. Make sure you guys tap into that. YouTube.com/the NBA report or at the NBA report on YouTube. Remember that this show is also sponsored by Oakley. Salute to our guys at Oakley. And also Manscaped, man. Go to manscaped.com. Use promo code KFTV for 20% off plus free shipping. I'm going to get my guy Corey in here. While we do that, let's get to Ari. Ari on the Discord. Ari, how you feeling, man?
What up? What up? You guys hear me all right?
Yeah, loud and clear, man. How you feeling, bro?
Sure.
Long time, man. Where you been, man?
Yeah, man, I've been working. I get out at 8:30 every day now. So
okay.
It's been busy.
Yeah.
I wanted to do a little detox from the Heat series.
Okay.
So I want to catch up a little bit. So I'll try to do this quick. So
please.
I'm proud of Jalen Brunson doing the FIBA World Cup. Personally, I wouldn't want him to play. He just played a year of Tibbs basketball, and he was like literally one-man wrecking crew in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I don't need this guy putting more mileage on his body before the season even starts, but whatever. That's one thing. Now, free agency. Listen, man, the Carl Anthony Towns thing needs to stop. It's not happening. I can't let that happen, bro. I'm going to go on a whole mission to not let that happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's just supposed to make, on average, $55 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
And his contract doesn't end until 2028.
Mm.
Okay? I can think of 55 million other ways to spend $55 million than on a more talented, taller Julius Randle who chokes in the playoffs, who can't win with Jimmy Butler, can't win with Zach LaVine, can't win with Anthony Edwards.
Oh,
you can't win with D'Angelo Russell. I'm not a fan.
Going in right now. Yep.
I'm not a fan.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
No,
you know, I like the direction of the team.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the direction of the team, but I like where we're standing right now. We have most of our draft picks. We have Brunson on a cheap deal, and we overachieved this year. If we make the right moves, things will look good. That right move is not trading three draft picks for Carl Anthony Towns just to get bounced out in the second round or Eastern Conference Finals or whatever. It's not the move, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Knicks need to pick the right player to go all in on. The right player, and that means patience, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I know Knicks fans don't like to hear it, but we need to be patient. I like Kyle Kuzma. Somehow try to You know, he's not going to get paid $50 million. He'll probably get $25, $30 million, right? It's still ridiculous, but at least it's not crazy money, all right? He can stretch the floor. He's tall. He's like 6'10". He can open things up a little bit. Mm-hmm. If you have to sacrifice a pick to get off of Fournier, whatever. The bottom line is the Knicks can't pay Josh Hart $18 million. They can't pay Emmanuel Quickley $20 million a year. They can't pay Obi Toppin $15 million a year. They're going to have to either reset the rookie contracts or consolidate and bring in a real, real difference maker. I don't see a real difference maker out there besides maybe Joel Embiid. I don't buy it. I don't think it's happening. Jaylen Brown, I don't buy it. I don't think it's happening. So I think we should make the minor upgrades. We made it to the second round of the playoffs. Julius Randle had the worst shooting performance since a decade before the civil rights era, since the 40s, okay? If he's not the worst playoff basketball player in history, who knows what would have happened, right?
Yeah.
Who knows? If Tom Thibodeau didn't double Jimmy Butler like he was 2006 Kobe Bryant, who knows what would have happened?
Yeah.
So I think we should just play it slow, man. Play it slow. Keep on building. Keep on adding assets. I love Quickley. I love Toppin, but you might have to reset the rookie contracts. You can't just pay everybody, all right? So that's basically where I'm at with that, man. Make the minor upgrades. Be opportunistic. Don't like come too far. Like, be opportunistic. And thank you for the call, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. Ari in the building, man. Rate that call in the chat, man. One being trash, five being facts. I'm seeing a couple fives in here, Al. No tomatoes tonight for Ari.
I'm going to give him a five for that one.
Oh, how come, man? Talk about it, man. Let's talk about it.
I do not like Karl Anthony Towns. Do not put that name near the New York Knicks.
Right.
I also like the marginal upgrades that he talked about too, man. Like, unless you see something like a real opportunity out there, there's no sense in just rushing anything. Just for the sake of rushing and trying to make something out of nothing. So like getting someone in like Karl Anthony Towns or maybe even like a Zach LaVine, you know what I mean? Cause Zach LaVine is another guy who's getting paid. I like Zach LaVine.
A lot of buzz right now for Zach LaVine, man.
I like Zach LaVine as a player. The contract is like Karl Anthony Towns, just very scary because it's like Bradley Beal, man.
Yeah.
You know, guy that gets paid that much, but yet hasn't produced a lot of winning, hasn't produced a lot of playoff success.
Mm-hmm.
A lot to have on the books when the Knicks already made it to the second round with guys on better deals. So I like what Ari had to say, man. Marginal upgrades right now and keep it rolling until you find that deal, man. If it is Joel Embiid, though, I'm making a move for Joel Embiid.
Okay. Well, let me welcome in our guest, man, returning to the show. It's been a little while, man, but him and his guys have been doing big, big things on this NBA draft. C-Man, Corey Tulliver, the Hardwood Herald, the No Ceilings podcast in the building. Corey, how you feeling, man? Welcome back, bro.
My guys, what's going on, man?
Good, man.
What's going on, Corey?
We were talking playoffs and stuff like that. That's why you haven't been on in such a long time, man.
You guys ain't got no draft pick.
Yeah, well, that is. Well, as we talked about Josh Hart, you know, the draft picks did go to acquire him on the team, but you never know. They could end up back in the dance come June. When's the draft? June 22nd? They could end up back in the dance come June 22nd. So, with that being said, well, first off, on the LaVine topic, since you are a Bulls fan, you now have seen this team through the 82-game season. You know, what was your – how did you feel like LaVine got through the end of things, and what do you feel like his future is with the Bulls?
I mean, I feel like he was playing some of his best basketball of his career at the end of the season. I think, you know, he was hurt to start the year. So him starting off really slow wasn't shocking to me. The Bulls season honestly went pretty much exactly how I had foreseen it. I mean, Lonzo was the guy that made that offense run. He's the engine of that team. He is the glue, the connecting piece. And with him, you know, who knows what's going on with him, but with him not playing this year, you know, that magic just wasn't there. And when you start adding in the variance of like the year before, the Bulls were winning all these clutch games, which is something that, you know, could ebb and flow. They weren't winning those games, but, you know, they were a weird team. completely middle of the pack, had a positive point differential, right? You know, a couple of minutes away from eliminating the Heat in the play-in game. You know, they were just this up and down team that had some positive moments and then had some just blah moments. And I mean, I don't know what direction they're going. There's talks that Vucevic is, you know, they're trying to work out an extension.
Yeah,
and look, if they're thinking maybe we could sign him to an extension so he's locked up and then we could flip him at another point for an asset instead of losing him for nothing after, you know, they took a little bit of egg on the face with the, with the, you know, the Orlando trade. But for me, I think that the Bulls are just in a situation with Lonzo's injury not looking very good in the long term. I think they should just completely blow it up. Now they have,
rebuild,
you know,
man.
You know, I understood this year as to why they would, you know, continue going for a playoff spot. You know, the chances of getting into the top four were slim, even if they potentially, you know, had bottomed out. They could have gone the Detroit route, and still given a pick to Orlando. But now's the time. Now it's like you could probably get value. You could definitely get good value for, you know, the LaVine, DeRozan, Alex Caruso. Like these guys are going to have value. They're going to be able to get picks. They're going to be able to recoup, you know, whatever they need to recoup. And then, you know, it takes a little bit of pressure off Lonzo having to return and you know, be the player that he was on that short Bulls tenure. Now's the time, but the Bulls ownership doesn't operate like that. And, you know, if they're okay with just going middle of the road, you know, 40, 42, 43 wins and, you know, filling the seats and potentially earning some playoff revenue, that could be the most likely path. But with this new CBA and these, you know, the rules with the contracts, I haven't delved too far into, you know, the implications for the Bulls roster. But for me, I would just be like, hey, let's blow it up. And look, next year's draft is not necessarily the draft that you want to blow it up for. It's not. It is going to be very much the opposite of this current draft with the way it's looking early. But, you know, going forward, I mean, you got the Cam Boozer, you got Cooper Flagg. Like, the time to just clear the decks and start being bad is now.
Yeah, I think so, man. I like you said that. I thought the going all in for Vucevic was a huge mistake. I don't think anybody really saw that going anywhere. Now you're faced with the prospect of not even having Lonzo Ball. They're saying that he could be done, which is just completely unfortunate. But, you know, not surprising given the amount of time that he's missed and all the knee surgeries and all the hush-hush that's been out there in regards to his injury. And so, yeah, you're right. I think they do need to look at just doing it now. I mean, how much longer is DeMar DeRozan's stock going to be, you know, serviceable to another team? As you said, Caruso, teams will always look for a guy like of Caruso's caliber. And even LaVine. You know, even LaVine, who, like you said, finished strong this year. Look, man, 24 points per game, 25 points per game, a bucket. I like it. I just don't like it on the Knicks, man. I just don't like it on the Knicks for a guy with his contract, with the new CBA coming into play, and the penalties that come with hitting that second apron. I just don't think it's a move they can make. They already have a defensive liability at the one in Brunson. Now, in a potential trade with LaVine, obviously RJ is going to be at the top of that list. You're going to move him into the lineup. I just don't like it, man. The knee concerns, you know, as a standalone player, nice player, good player, a bucket that the Knicks could use. You know, the New York Bricks could certainly use a guy like that. But as when you're talking about complementary pieces, it's not just offensively. You got to think about the defensive side of the ball as well. And with Brunson out there, they have to make sure that they have some versatile defensive studs in that lineup. Because right now, your top three players on that team and that starting unit are average at best defensively. And I think that's a problem. That's part of the problem.
Yeah, I don't see the fit with LaVine and the Knicks either. I mean, honestly, LaVine's kind of a hard guy to fit onto any of the teams that are contending. you know, because you are going to have that the defensive concerns. And, you know, he definitely has times where he competes and he holds his own because he's big and strong and athletic. But, you know, you shouldn't be looking for times where he's holding his own when he's going to be making that percentage of the cap, right? It's tough. It's tough. He fetch value on the market, but for New York, like, I don't see them even as good trading partners. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Do the Bulls want RJ Barrett? And they're going to have to, you know, you clear the decks. You don't get guys that are going to get you to a mediocre position. You're
right.
Just shuffling, you know, chairs on the ship. So it's tough, but you know, look, this is why these front offices get paid the big bucks. They got to make these decisions.
True. 40 million this year, 43 next year, 45 the year after that, 25, 26. And then a player option for 48. You got to think he's going to take it. He'd be 31 at that time.
He's taking that one.
That's a lot of duck. That's a lot of duck.
Ain't no way he's turning that
ain't
down.
Ain't no way.
Unless this new CBA is like, you could sign $60 million for 1 year. Nah, like,
hey, man, it might. I got to dive into the CBA. And so I feel like now reporting on the numbers, like the actual dollar amounts, somebody's got to take charge and be like, nah, we're changing things up and we're going percentage of the cap. Because, you know, back when the cap was like $60 million and guys were making 20-something, you're like, oh my, I can't believe how much money this is. And now that's like, you know, role player,
average.
MLE type money,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so I feel like whoever is in charge of, you know, Keith Smith, I don't know, whoever the guy on the internet who's in charge of making that, the cap Twitter, they got to take charge and stop with the dollar amounts, start going by percentage of the cap. So people could stop freaking out about the raw numbers. Cause they're going to be bonkers going forward.
Yeah. We still haven't caught up with the raw numbers yet. I mean, we're still shocked that Mozgov got paid, whatever he got paid. What was it, like 60,
that was 60 when Mozgov Bismack got the bag, boys. That was a good time to be in the NBA, man. Great time to be.
I remember like the cap change. You see Mozgov get that contract. I was like, what? I was like, who?
Yeah.
Hello.
Mozgov and Bismack got the bag, man. Absolutely. Salute to everybody in the chat. Once again, hit that thumbs up button for you boys. You're talking to Corey Tuller, the Hardwood Herald, No Ceilings podcast in the building. Let's talk about this draft class, man. What's your, you know, you guys have done extensive work on this class this year. How do you feel about this class as compared to years past? Obviously, Wembanyama's been the talk of the town. We know that. Scoot Henderson. But what do you think about the overall group as compared to previous years?
I think this draft class has a chance to go down with some of the greats, you know, the 96, 2003. First thing you got to look at when you're looking at that is generational type players, right? And that's what we have in Victor Wembanyama. I feel like we've been misusing the term unicorn, you know, all this time because he truly is one. I mean, the guy is bizarre. Even if you go watch him pregame, he's putting on a circus juggling act. And when you see a guy who's 7'5" doing that, you know, it's just he constantly does stuff that we've never seen before. But beyond that, you have Scoot Henderson, you have Brandon Miller, you have potentially the Thompson twins who, you know, I might be a little iffier on than the general consensus. But, you know, those are guys who are going to come into the league as, you know, top tier athletes as soon as they step on the hardwood. Jairus Walker is a personal favorite of mine, a guy who I think is going to be able to play a BAM type role. And the depth in this class, I think, is really, really impressive. I think that, you know, even into the second round, you're going to find guys that are sticking and playing in the playoffs. So I think that had a chance to be special, man. And, you know, I just think it's more of an influx of this talent that we've seen, you know, come in, you know, year after year. We just keep getting talented crops of players that, you know, are showing. And for me, all that it shows is like, if you're going to be a superstar in this league, you're going to be a guy who's playing right now in June.
Mm-hmm.
Like you got your work cut out for you because, you know, the talent level ain't slowing down. It's continuing to trend up. But this draft class has got you name it. And there's a player that matches the description. It's got a little bit of everything.
What do you think? So only ask this question because there's a lot of conversation right now between Scoot and Brandon Miller at two. Who are you leaning on right now?
Man, you know, it's tough. I go back and forth with it. I've been going with Brandon Miller lately just because, you know, ignoring the off-court issues, you know, Brandon Miller's a guy who I was personally really high on coming into the year. You know, he was ranked in the 15-16 range coming into the year. I had him top five the whole year. So to me, I saw the talent. He played in a system where it was, you know, rim and threes in college. And he well outproduced his three-point outlook coming into the year. He was a gunner, 38%, you know, eight threes a game. You know, absolutely crazy volume shot making. But what he showed in high school was mid-range stuff, you know, a lot of playmaking. Like, this is a guy who has other aspects that he didn't even show this year. And he was so, so productive, had his on-court, his off-court issue, came back, dropped 40, you know, that night, like, dealt with the adversity. So as long as that stuff checks out, 6'9", can run pick and roll, sniper as a three-point shooter. He's a guy that I could just see being, you know, one of the top options on a championship team, you know, playing in June. Scoot is, I mean, physically 6'2", 6'9", wingspan. He looks like a Marvel character. And he is ridiculously talented. I mean, he's got two pro seasons under his belt already. You know, he was 17 years old playing in the G League. Incredibly nuanced, mature game. But he's 6'2". And those guys, when was the last time that a guy who wasn't a Steph Curry level shooter at the point guard spot was the number one option on a championship team? So he's got a much high, and look, I don't know if Brandon Miller is the number one option on a championship team, but I know that he could be a guy who plays off of a number one option in a way that maybe I have questions about Scoot potentially doing it. Now, there are some scenarios that I definitely think Scoot could be a number two. Obviously there's been rumblings about Jaylen Brown potentially, you know, being an option. I think he would make a really good sidekick to Tatum if Tatum was okay with taking a step back this year to potentially take two steps forward, you know, throughout the rest of his Celtics tenure. But I do think that, you know, for everybody who's drafting Scoot and going, all right, this guy's going to lead us to a chip, you got to hope that he's more Dwayne Wade than maybe the, you know, Russell Westbrook, John Morant comparisons that he's gotten. And that I'm not sure of.
Have you heard anything like in regards to what the Blazers might do with three? Because I mean, if Miller goes to the Hornets, I would love to see Scoot and LaMelo ball out. But if Miller goes to the Hornets at two, I'm wondering if the Blazers keep that pick. You know, obviously Dame wants to compete. He's starting to make noise now. Yeah, they already have Simons there. I wonder what they would do, what the Blazers would do there at three. Would they just pick Scoot and be like, well, we're going to trade Dame anyway. Might as well keep this kid. Might as well keep another star in the making because we got no chance to compete anyway. I wonder what the Blazers would do there at three then.
I think they would keep Scoot. I mean, look, they were in the same position or a similar position last year where they had a high lottery pick and people were like,
true.
Oh, maybe they trade it, right?
Yeah,
get
yeah,
Dame
true,
some help.
True.
And they took Shaedon Sharpe, who, if he was in this draft class, would be in contention for the number three pick. You know, he was supposed to be in this draft class.
Mm-hmm.
They brought in Mike Schmidt for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
They brought a guy like that in because he is a premier talent evaluator. So, you know, I don't know why you would bring somebody like that in and then go and, you know, kind of pivot from
true.
When you have the opportunity to use his expertise. For me, I think that they would they're probably just going to end up keeping Scoot Henderson if they take him. You know, obviously Dame is fully capable of playing off the ball and sharing, you know, those duties. They clearly have no issues playing with two small guards in their backcourt. You know, they've been doing that for how long? So I think they probably move off Ant Simons in that case and, you know, maybe try to get some wing depth to better, you know, fit the roster around a guy like, you know, Sharp and, you know, Jeremy Grant somewhere in between there. But I'll tell you, they're tight-lipped guys there and, you know, they're not going to let anybody, you know, read that hand before draft night. But if I was guessing and Scoot's there, I think they take Scoot, let Dame kind of take him under his wing. And you got Scoot Henderson and Shaedon Sharpe to build your future with, and that's a pretty good starting point on top of whatever eventually you get for Dame.
Yeah, and Cam Reddish. Don't forget about Cam. we just had to drop that for the Knicks fans. The Cam hive is still
and
in
JD.
There. Yeah, and JD. JD. And JD.
Hey, Alex, JD. Cam, the girl at the club. Oh, those lights come on. The lights come on and it's Cam Reddish.
Oh, and like I said then, and I'll say now, woof.
Once again, we're talking to Corey Tulliver of the No Ceilings podcast, man. Check my guys out. They're doing great work on this NBA draft. The Thompson twins out of Overtime Elite. There's a lot of talk now that I believe it's Amen Thompson. His shooting form is a little wonky. It's a little off. Well, maybe some people are taking his brother over him. Think about that. And how close are these two guys as two brothers, two twins, these twins as prospects in this draft? How close are they to each other?
I mean, I've had his brother Asar ranked over Amen since the summer. And No Ceilings as a whole. We made that shift a few months ago as the collective. Man, Amen's shot, Alex's gonna have to give us another woof for that one. Mm. We could sit and talk about, like, you know, the Overtime Elite competition level. Mm-hmm. You know, they're 20 years old. They're playing against some kids that are 16 years old. Like, it's a high school league.
Mm.
And I think that we're going to see them lean much more into that going forward now that NIL is available. You know, all the kids now, they're signing NIL deals. They're going off to the G League Ignite. They're going off to the D1 colleges. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not using this as a means to make professional money right now. But that wasn't available when the Thompson signed on. Mm-hmm. So they're almost a victim of that because they almost assuredly would have taken a different route.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say, I've been to Atlanta. I went to the pro day. I got to watch them work out. I see the training that they're getting. The games might not be competitive, but the training, the facilities, everything they're learning there is top notch. But Amen has already changed his shot probably 3 to 4 times over the last like year and a half. And you know, as an NBA franchise, you're going to change that again when he gets there. You're going to rebuild that with your shooting coaches.
Mm.
So this is a guy who is just continuously going through shooting form changes, and he's yet to figure it out. I mean, look, I saw him at the pro day, just shooting around, no cameras, right? Just clanking. I mean, I got video on my phone of him missing, you know, 10 open jumpers in a row in a gym. You know what I mean? Like, so he's not close as a shooter. He might be this crazy athlete who's going to be able to get in the paint, but they were playing him like Westbrook in the OTE, like sagging off in the paint, daring him to shoot. You can go watch the full games. Shooting air balls off those. Like, he's not a competent three-point shooter right now. The numbers, you know, they back it up. Asar, he might not be as quick twitchy as Amen, but I think that his playmaking's underrated. He actually averaged almost the same amount, maybe a little bit more of assists as Amen did, who is noted as the point guard playmaker. And while the shooting percentages aren't that much better than Amen's, the form is just significantly better. He's just made way more progress on that end. And for that reason, like, Amen is a guy who almost, it feels like he needs to play with the ball in his hands because he can't, you know, he's not going to do some of the little things. He's not used to it. He didn't grow up playing that way. Asar has grown up playing off the ball. He has a little bit of a better shot. He's more comfortable catching and shooting, attacking off second side actions. I just think Asar is a guy who you can at least project, if he doesn't hit his top end outcome, he could still be kind of like an Andrew Wiggins-y complimentary piece. I don't know what Amen looks like if he's not the dude. And if you look at the top of the draft where he's projected, is he going to take the ball out of Cade Cunningham and Jaden Ivey's hands? Is he going to take the ball out of Jalen Green's hands and Kevin Porter Jr.? Mm. You have to rip that ball out of their cold. They ain't passing that thing.
That's a fact.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So, like San Antonio might have been the move, but they got Wemby, right? Like, they didn't have that player. Does Portland take a shot at them? I mean, they got Dame who's got the ball in his hand. So I just I look for a scenario in that top where Amen's projected, and I just go, who's going to just give them the ball? Like I said, there's too much talent, and these teams, they're drafting these ball handlers early. So, I'm a little bit iffy on Amen. I still have him as a top 10 guy just because he does have that crazy athleticism. He is a really talented passer. But I have my concerns, more concerns than I think the general consensus does.
Based on your concerns, would you be shocked if you dropped out of the top 10?
No. Out of the top 10, maybe, because I do think that Washington at 8 and Utah at 9 would be actually really great for his play style, like especially Utah, like all of that open space, five-out system, allowing him to get downhill, playing with pace, make use of his passing abilities. I think Utah, I don't think he gets past there. But, you know, based on conversations that I've had with, you know, executives in the league, I do think they're – is a chance that he drops a little bit further than maybe people are anticipating. Cause a lot of people think he's like the consensus number three guy above a guy like Brandon Miller. Some people have Amen above Spoot. So I do think, you look at the highlights, you'd understand why. You look at the raw numbers, you understand why. You know, his finishing numbers are crazy, but 25% of his possessions come in transition. So when you cut that down into the half court, those numbers get a little bit bleaker against, you know, guys who aren't real shot blockers in the league. So when you start really digging in, there are reasons for concern. Now, you know, obviously the competition's bad. They did do a tour in Europe over the summer, and they played well there. So there is, you know, you can't fully go into they only played bad competition. But I definitely think the concerns are real. I mean, you really are not getting many jump shots even in their workout videos. You know what I mean? Like, it's you wonder, like, the content teams at the workout are barely putting, you know, jump shot clips up. You know, so it makes you wonder a little bit. I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist, but, who knows how they shot it in those workouts. So I wouldn't be surprised if both of the twins fell out of the top five.
We appreciate conspiracy theories on this show, Corey.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. We do enjoy throwing the tinfoil hats on from time to time.
Hey, man.
That's likely to happen.
You're frozen envelopers.
Absolutely. Absolutely,
1,000%.
What position is the position of depth in this draft? Or what type of draft is this?
Honestly, man, I think there's a little bit of everything. You know, I guess the one thing the draft doesn't have is really like stretch fives. I know you guys were talking about adding a potential stretch five.
Yeah.
There's not too many of those guys, but if you want like buckety kind of Jamal Murray-esque combo guards, you know, we got your Keyonte George, you know, we got your Nick Smith, who's a guy that I'm not in love with, but, you know, those guys are available. If you want your big oversized point guards, you know, you got Anthony Black, you got Jalen Huchefino. If you want your shooters, you got Jet Howard and Jordan Hawkins. You want your 3-and-D, you know, Jabari Smith type guy, you got Taylor Hendricks. You want your freak athlete, you got Cam Whitmore and the Thompson twins. You want your, you know, modern Toronto Raptors, the 6'8", 7'2" wingspan forward, you got Jarris Walker. I mean, the draft has a little bit of everything. It's even got upperclassmen. I think the upperclassmen in this draft are really talented. You got Trace Jackson Davis out of Indiana. You got Jaime Jaquez out of UCLA. You got Marcus Sasser from Houston. So I think that, you know, that's what I loved about this draft class in particular, is that it really has a little bit of something for everybody. And, you know, if teams draft the right way, they could get some value at their picks.
Interesting. Go ahead. Go ahead, Al.
No, so with this draft class and with the hype that it's getting, you said it's going to live up to the hype, right? You said it's going to be one of the top draft classes that we've probably ever seen. It's going to be up there.
I think it's got a chance. Yeah.
Okay. So if the Knicks were to move into like the back end of this draft,
remember the Pacers, they got 8, 26, and 29 in the first round.
Yes. And that's where I was going. So with the Pacers, right? So let's say you go 26, 29, you still expect someone around that range to be that impactful on a team for someone like the Knicks?
I think you can get value there for sure. You know, I'm looking at a guy like Colby Jones, Big East guy out of Xavier, 6'5", 6'6", do-it-all guy, improved his three-point shooting this year, had the pleasure of breaking down film with him.
Nice.
Just, you know, a really high IQ. and he's a guy, you know, I did a statistical query where, you know, he's doing a little bit of everything with the, you know, rebound percentage, assist percentage, steal, block, the defensive stuff. And it's a pretty powerful list of guys for outcomes that he could have, which is Derek White, Tyrese Halliburton was on the list, James Harden was on the list. You know, obviously he falls more towards that Derek White tier, in my opinion, but it's just a bunch of Lonzo was on the list. It's a bunch of guys that are connecting pieces, glue guys. You know, he's got a little bit of Josh Hart in his game. You know, I think he's going to be a guy that people look at and they say he's boring. He is a little older, so his upside has, you know, he doesn't have the kind of upside you project. But I don't know how you could say that after watching these playoffs and you see, you know, the Cody Martin and Josh Hart and all these guys that are that exact kind of player being so impactful. So that's a guy that in that range I think is going to be there because I think teams are going to swing on a guy like G.G. Jackson before that and hope that, you know, he hits and becomes a superstar. So there's definitely going to be value towards the end of that first round for sure.
Now I'm wondering because, you know, the Knicks and the Pacers, we're talking about an Obi Toppin trade at the deadline this year. Now, I don't know what type of player this Jarace Walker is, but I'm looking at Tankathon, and they have him going to the Pacers at number 7, and he plays the 4. So I'm thinking, and you got Taylor Hendricks going at 8. So, I mean, if the Pacers were to get one of these guys 7-8, would a top and trade even make sense for the Pacers?
I think it's one of those two guys for the Pacers. Unless those two guys are off the board, and they very well could be. You know, I got Jarace 4th on my personal board. That I've had him top 5 all year. He's a guy who played on a veteran Houston Cougars team that, you know, had a good run this year, won a ton of games, and he just played a role. Like, and when I think about him with Halliburton and Mathurin and he's a perfect fit next to Miles Turner, who, you know, was stretch big, and he's the perfect fit there. Taylor Hendricks, another guy, doesn't need the ball in his hands, catch and shoot, you know, take advantage of the playmaking that those guys have. It's hard. It would be hard for me to see them passing on either of those two guys because not only is the fit so clean, but those guys are two guys with a ton of potential. So, to me, if either of those two guys are there and they kind of pass on it, I don't even know what kind of swing they would take because the fit is like a glove, man.
Mm. Now, salute to my guy Jay from East New York, Fight Out Super Chat. He says the Knicks need a wing or a stretch 5. Two players that will be in the second are Jordan Walsh and Tristan Vukcevic. What's the scouting report on those two? Jordan Walsh, Tristan Vukcevic.
Well, if you're looking for shooting, you're not looking at it from Jordan Walsh. I could tell you that. I like Jordan Walsh. I think that he's a guy in the second round that is definitely a worthy flyer. He's like 6'8", 7'2", wingspan, phenomenal defender. He's going to be able to handle the physicality immediately. But he plays pretty sped up. You know, he's like listening to a podcast at 1.5 speed. Like, it's just, you know, it's tall. Like, you might actually be able to, you know, hit a couple of podcasts on your drive. I'm a 1.5 speed kind of guy.
Okay.
I got a lot of podcasts I got to listen to.
You got to get through it.
Have you ever tried two?
No, two's so deep.
It's like the micro machines guy. Like, yeah. There's no way.
Like, Jordan Walsh ain't a 2 on podcast. Like, he's playable, but sometimes he's just like, all right, we got to slow down sometimes because I just missed something. Yeah, I spaced out for a minute. I missed something. I got to rewind. The Vucevic is, to me, I'm not a big Vucevic fan. You know, he's a guy, he had a little bit of buzz last year, and then his play tailed off. He came on this year. He went to the combine. He had, like, 10 or 12 points, like, in a few minutes. In the one game he played, and then he shut it down. I mean, he could shoot it, facing the floor, but defensively, I have concerns. You know, I don't think if he's a guy that you take at the end of the second round, the middle of the second round, like, I get it. You know, it could be a good value play, but I think that, you know, in the combine setting, like, if he just misses 2 of those shots, you know, he went 2 for 4 instead of 4 for 4 or whatever, right? Like, he still shoots 50%, but he doesn't look nearly as good. I could see a world where a team drafts him and stashes him. and goes that route. But yeah, he's like I said, not too many stretch fives in this draft. He might be the best one, and for me, that's saying something.
So you probably think maybe draft and stash.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Even if he comes over, I don't think he's got the defensive chops to find minutes on the floor for a winning team, right?
Yeah, like, not for Tibbs.
No.
Yeah, he's not playing today. Yeah, they're not picking him. Now, it was said that the Knicks, the only person that we know that the Knicks did interview, because the Knicks have been out there. They've been at CAA Pro Day. They've been at the Combine. G.G. Jackson, power forward out of South Carolina. The Knicks did interview him. What do you know about him?
G.G. is going to be one of the most controversial players in this draft. He's the youngest player in the draft. He's eligible by 2 weeks. He reclassified. He was supposed to go to North Carolina and play there next year, but he reclassed and played at South Carolina. The team was terrible. He was terrible. I think he shot 37-32. I had an NBA executive tell me, if you like players that take the absolute worst shots every time they touch the ball, then G.G. Jackson's the guy for you.
Oh, my God.
When we were having this conversation, I said that G.G. Jackson is going to be the Kevin Knox to somebody's Mikal Bridges.
Oh, man.
In that they are going to reach for his potential, because you look at him physically and you're like, this kid was 17? And like, what? And you look at the highlights. Like, yo, if you look at his highlights, you're like, this kid's Jason Tatum. Like, he's knocking down tough mid-range shots. He's got a bag, but absolutely will never pass the ball. His pet, like, just won't do. Like, he didn't average one assist a game on the kind of usage that he had. And yeah, he's young, right? He's playing up a level, right? Kind of the opposite of the Thompson twins. And but so that you could at least use that as be like, well, the speed of the game is new to him, especially because he's a year behind developmentally. So you got to be patient with him. But it's just one of those things when you watch him, you're like, all the talent in the world, but the feel's just not there. And if you're a team, like, he's a kid, like, he needs those shots. He needs those reps. He needs the minutes on the floor. But I don't know what team is just going to throw him on the court and be like, all right, go do your thing. Like, he's going to get drafted. He's going to spend some time in the G League. And who knows when he's going to be ready, if ever, to be the kind of player that teams want him to be. Like, you know, we see it all the time with these guys who are so highly ranked in high school because they were able to get buckets, and then they come in and it's Cam Reddish. You know what I mean? Like, it's harder at this level. You got to match, you got to be elite at this stuff, and you got to be able to play off of other guys, because there are so many talented players, and he hasn't shown that he could play off of other guys yet. So if he's a swing, like, he's being projected to go in the second now. So if he falls to the second round, hey, that's a swing worth taking, because, you know, you might hit a home run, but you take him early, you might strike out. So that's kind of the options. It's hard to really picture too much of an in-between with him.
And with, so for G.G., right, you said he played poorly, the team played poorly. Why did the team play poorly? Is it like, could he not perform because the rest of the team was playing badly as well, or is it
I mean, he's playing in the SEC, you know, one of the best conferences in college basketball. It's not like he was playing, you know, in the WAC or something with some college, whoever the F state that you know, you know, that you never heard of. So he's playing in a real conference. He's young. The team's not that talented. They're going up against talented teams every single night. College basketball has never been older. You know, DeAndre Williams in Memphis, 26 years old, and he's trying to get another year of college to be 27 playing college ball next year. So because of COVID and getting that extra year, the grad year, you know, college basketball is super old. So there's a lot of reasons why maybe he struggled. But at the end of the day, probably would have been better going up to school next year, trying to figure out some of the stuff that he didn't figure out this year and develop at his own pace instead of rushing the process. And then he went to the combine. You know, there's rumors that he was sick during his pro day workout, but executives left saying that he looked lazy. He wasn't hitting shots. He wasn't going, you know, he was going through the motions. He had an Instagram live at one point during the year where he was complaining that he wasn't the guy getting the final shots.
Then he started
getting brought off the bench after that. So, you know, there's a lot of red flags with
maturity,
Gigi. And look, he was 17, 18 years old handling this,
yeah.
Right? But you still got to know that you're going to be under a microscope. This is, you know, the social media generation.
Yeah.
So you got to know that these are the outcomes. You got to understand that. And just like Jalen Duren, you know, might have worked out doing the same thing, reclassing, maybe not being in the most ideal situation. He comes to the NBA, he's fine. You could also be Imani Bates, where you do go back and, you know, you just – the hype was overrated. And I would lean more that way with Gigi than the Jalen Duren route.
Okay. Yeah, sounds like a lot of red flags, man. But you
sounds like a keeper.
Yeah, sounds like a keeper. But you know what? I mean – look, man, I think the Knicks, they need to, just like the Cam thing, they need to widen the player development, you know, process a little bit and try to just see if they could bring some diamonds in the rough. Like, in the past, they're just looking for plug-and-play guys, and that's fine. That's cool because they have some value there and quickly certainly established himself, and Grimes had his moments, and even McBride to a certain extent, but, They may need to see if they find a diamond in the rough somewhere, because it's just so hard to find that guy. You just never know, man. But
you think the Knicks are in the position to do that, TP?
Hey, when you got vetted leadership like Julius Randle, you know, to steer Gigi, I mean.
Well, look, man. Right,
get me up out of here.
Listen, the G League framework seems to be pretty tight. Like I said, you got Jaren Jackson Jr. down there. You got Deshaun and Jopp as the head coach. You know, I had some conversations with those guys. They, you know, seems like a pretty thorough process, tight ship that they're running down there. Who knows? Obviously, the Cam thing flopped, but, you know, like – is Trevor Keels ever going to develop into anything? No. I mean, to take a fly on somebody like this, this guy looks like a bucket. Just got to get his mind right. You know?
Trevor Keels is actually a pretty good lesson for a lot of these guys. Like, this is that's a guy who needed that second year of college.
Mm.
You know, he came out too early. He probably had guys in his ears, like, go pro. Like, you know, like he had the game to open the season up at Madison Square Garden. The lights were bright, you know, like he performed. The executives will remember that. But man, when you're in the NBA, you ain't competing with whoever's going to, you know, at South Carolina is going to go be an accountant after this. You know, you got to be better than Jason Tatum and Jimmy Butler and, you know, all these dudes. And the bar is high right now, man. The bar is high.
Is there, you know, a couple years in a row now, there's been that, like, that super riser up into the lottery. Your guy Pat Williams was one of those guys a couple years ago. Is there another guy like that this year?
This year, it seems like it's going to be Bilal Coulibaly from Victor Wembanyama's teammate from Mets 92. I mean, he was a guy who started out playing on the junior team, dominated down there, came up and has been balling out, including in the playoffs where he's really hitting his stride. I mean, he's 18 years old. I think he'll be 18 on draft night. Like, he's rumored to be 6'8 in shoes with a 7'2 wingspan. He wasn't at the combine because this season is still going on. But, man, if you watch this kid on the court, he is smooth, man. I mean, the Euros, like, he's gliding on the court. He's got skates on, you know, it's just – he moves like the way a basketball player is supposed to move. He plays defense. I think the shot is okay in spot-up situations, but the pull-up stuff is going to take a little bit of time. But there's a lot of rumors now that, you know, he could be, you know, locked into a floor at OKC at 12.
Wow. A lot of people think getting a guy like that.
Yeah, a lot of people think that he won't even make it there.
Wow.
And this is a guy who, you know, was probably more in that 20 to 25 range about a month ago. So right now he's the hottest name in the draft. And it would not shock me if, you know, Orlando at 6, you know, drafted him, you know, something like that. And everyone's like, who's this guy? Mm. And then, you know, you start seeing the highlights and realize he's Victor's teammate. But when you see him on the court, you understand why this kid is getting the hype that he's getting, because he's legit. Like, he could hoop.
Mm. Kid's got some springs, man. Very, very interesting indeed. Shout out to our guy, Big Surge. Big Surge has been going in on the chat right now. 3 month franchise channel member, man. So we thank Big Surge for his support. He says, Corey, he's asking rather, Corey, what are your thoughts on either Dariq Whitehead or Leonard Miller? Dariq Whitehead, Leonard Miller, your thoughts?
Damn, got me out here. Sound like a hater on this show, man. Dariq is a guy who had a lot of hype coming into the year. A lot of people had him in that top five range. He's a Montburg guy, you know, Scotty Barnes, Cade Cunningham's teammate, 5 years, played on at Montburg as an eighth grader. And he just had a nightmare season at Duke. You know, he was injured to start the year, came back, really struggled, really, really struggled. Was unplayable, hurt himself again, came back. Now, he knocked down open shots, so he shot 40% from three, was in the 80s from the line. But all the stuff that he showed off the bounce in high school that people were excited about was a disaster. He wasn't that good defensively. I thought his playmaking, every now and then, he showed some flashes. So, you know, I'd be more optimistic about that than the numbers indicate. But he's just a guy who – also very young, one of the younger players in the draft, but you know, he's one of these guys that I think when you look at the hype and what he was expected to be based on his senior season, and you realize, all right, he might not be able to be that in the NBA. And if he's not that, can he be the guy who is just okay catching and shooting, maybe, you know, cutting off ball, you know, playing defense? If he's willing to do that, I think he's got a pretty good chance of being a good role player, because he's got good, you know, physical measurements. You know, he's like 6'6" with a 6'10", 6'11" wingspan. He's thick. Again, he's young. I think he's a little bit more athletic than he showed this year at Duke, although, you know, the athletic kind of numbers were pretty rough. You know, he only had two dunks this year, but again, he dealt with injuries. So he's a guy that I think at the right spot, I would understand a team taking a shot on, you know, the pre-draft hype that he had, and the shooting stroke at his position. Leonard Miller is a guy that, you know, you either have him in the lottery or you have him, you know, back towards the end of the first round. Some people love him. He's 6'10", 7'2" wingspan. Last year he played at the